This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You and I have unfinished business.
The first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Get away from her, you...
Ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
At the Movies on BFM 89.9.
I'm Umar Paganampakepang and joined, as always, by Ian McNally and Bahir Yusuf. Mission Impossible Fallout is now in cinema, so we thought, hey, it's a good time to take a look back at all five other Mission Impossible movies.
Oh, we're not doing all the TV show episodes?
No.
I thought that's what we were doing.
No,
oh, man.
Oh,
and not
the
even
thing.
The 1988 reboot of the TV show. So the movie franchise... It pains me to say started in 1996, which makes me feel incredibly old. That was 22 years ago.
Yeah.
And of course, the first one was directed by the great Brian De Palma.
It's an odd egg.
It is.
What were they thinking?
What were they thinking making Jim the bad guy? I mean, that was what went down the worst, right? Because
if it had been, I mean, making it the older kind of boss man character was a good idea. Making it Jim Phelps is like making Hannibal the bad guy in the A-Team.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's what rubbed a lot of fans the wrong way. However, the movie really holds up. I was watching it again and I was like, it isn't a Mission Impossible movie. It's a Brian De Palma thriller.
Oh, no, but hang on. It feels like an extended Mission Impossible episode from the TV show, right? It doesn't feel like this new Tom Cruise Mission Impossible for me because it feels there's a lot more spy stuff. There's a lot more sort of like intriguey things.
But there's no team. That's the thing I think.
There's no team.
Ties
that's
the
true.
Mission Impossible thing together. Although, this is like it's an action movie with the Mission Impossible framework, but half the framework's missing.
Okay.
But also it has Tom Cruise brooding in hotel rooms for a long time.
Yeah.
Reading the Bible.
Incredibly short hair. That's like the shortest hair he's ever had.
Hair check.
There's an episode, hair check. But like that's the shortest haircut of the franchise.
Yeah.
There's the brooding in rooms, but there's also like Emilio Estevez gets eaten by a lift.
That's right.
Like that's a genius thing. And I mean, especially it wouldn't have maybe been such a secret now in this time of internet and spoilers and everything. But the fact is they have a whole team. They are a cast of relatively well-ish known actors, and then they all get moited in the first 5 minutes of the movie, and it's great.
Yes, and actually that sequence is tremendous. Watching that mission fall apart by piece is absolutely fantastic.
I think also because, you know, you're going into it, you would have had some idea of what Mission Impossible was, right? Mm. You'd have seen either TV shows, you would have seen something. And for it to just go horribly wrong in the first 5 minutes, you just go, wait, what am I watching? I thought this was Mission Impossible. They don't die on Mission Impossible.
No matter what happens, they always come out on top.
Yeah, so for that to happen right at the beginning, I believe I remember watching it with my dad, and I remember him just sort of like, what is this? You know, it's like, this is not Mission Impossible. Team members don't die, you know? It's just like, it was before the age of gritty reboots where the good guys are semi-bad guys.
It was just like the Lost in Space reboot at the same time.
Yeah. That's true.
The movie did very well, though, at the box office, but it took 4 years before they would actually bring out another one. And then they completely changed the format. They got John Woo. And they thought, hey, let's do a straight-up action flick instead of a Mission Impossible movie. Yet again, in the second one, the team is non-existent. I mean, Ving Rhames is there and the weird Aussie dude is there.
Helicopter pilot.
Yeah, yeah. But it really is a Tom Cruise movie because it's all about him doing everything. Yeah.
This is the beginning of the Tom Cruise does crazy stunts, because the craziest stunt from the first one that was a real stunt was just blowing up the aquarium.
Exactly.
I have to say, is it Henry Cerny?
Kittredge.
Ever since then, I see that guy turn up and he's a good guy. He's a nice guy, whatever. It's like, there's that rat bastard Kittredge.
Exactly. I don't trust him either.
Never. And I never meet him in restaurants with aquariums nearby. Always meet him in restaurants with aquariums nearby.
And have a green light chewing gum.
It's your only escape route.
Yeah.
I love that scene from the first one, though, huh? Red.
Green.
No,
I think the other one with Cerny, the line of just like, but you're not worried about them. you're worried about me. You know, there's the switch where he realizes they think he's the double agent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is the standard trope that has played out through almost all six movies. This idea that Ethan Hunt might be the double agent, right? Mm. I think we didn't have it in 2.
No.
2 was essentially the first reboot of the franchise. It was also the highest grossing movie of 2000.
Mm.
And it was John Woo's highest grossing movie ever. Mm. The good thing about 2 was, and I hate to say this, Hans Zimmer's score, I really love it.
There's a point where... There's a point where, you know, it's the whole virus thing.
Yes.
Like they have the...
Bellerophon.
Is that Russian guy? The number of times he says, before we could have our Chimera, before we could have our Bellerophon, we had to have our Chimera. And he says it over and over and over again. There's a point where Thandi Newton picks up the last vial of the virus, and you've got 20 hours once you've injected yourself to get the antidote, and it's like it's a no-win situation. Cruz is doing this weird spinning thing as he goes from like cover to cover. Staying low and spinning
and
on his heel.
It's
like crouched flamenco dancing with guns. And she looks at it, no-win situation. What does she do? She injects herself.
Yes.
And the Zimmer music alone... I'm tearing up at this. Everybody's got a spotlight directly behind them.
Yes.
Even when Cruz is running for the hole in the wall, there's a spotlight out there as well. They just move away before he jumps through it. Like the music just swells beautifully. I'm thinking, and they're cutting to people shooting over things, and Cruz is looking. He's hard up now because she's going to die, and he doesn't know if he can save her, and he's only got one parachute, and the music just swells, and I'm like, Jesus, this movie's getting me. Why?
Why? Why? Because John Woo. He's a stylish man.
Yeah.
I did not like that one.
At all?
No.
When I first saw it in my 20s, I was completely swept away.
Yeah,
because
it was the 90s. Everything was extreme and it was great.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I don't think they repeat it in the other ones, but yes, the Limp Bizkit song is awful, but the actual tune played on electric guitars and flamenco guitars and just guitars in general does give it a certain air, and it's kind of cool. That's just the spinning. It's putting two cars on a turntable and putting bushes in the foreground so you can see that they're not on a turntable and then spinning them around each
other. And as they make sort of like eye contact and fall in love in super slow. God, that's so bad.
Also, as a result of the foreshadowing of the flamenco dancing that happened when they first met.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The most 90s thing I think about the whole thing is where Cruz turns up in the climax and he blows up a door. And the door frame is on fire, and a white dove from above flies through in front of him as he slow-mo walks past.
I don't know
it.
If that's a 90s thing. I think that's
most a John Woo
thing. Peak Woo would be the dove on its own. The door being on fire while Limp Bizkit plays, that's peak 90s.
I don't know. I was going to throw something else for peak 90s. That Oakley glasses that he puts on at the beginning.
Oakley glasses.
At the beginning where he gets his mission, that Oakley glasses, I think that's peak 90s.
And then he kind of flips it into the air and it explodes to
screen, and then it sort of explodes and opens the title.
And that was the beginning of Crazy Cruise, right? Because he did that stunt. I mean, what everyone was talking about.
There was no net for the hang, but there was a harness. And he tore his shoulder when they're doing that leap from one rock to another. So,
correct.
Nuts.
Yeah.
This one and the next one are probably the most significant movies because I don't think, if it wasn't for Mission Impossible 2, I don't think we'd have the franchise. I think it's because it made this much money and it kind of set Tom Cruise up.
Yeah, because 3 kind of underperformed.
It did underperform, actually.
Yeah, it made less money than 2. 2 made more than 1, or almost
a lot
than
more than 1, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, 2 really just introduced the world to Thandi Newton, so you can't really complain about that.
Okay.
Yeah, 2 and 3 being the most significant movies. Mission Impossible 3, though, kind of reinforces this notion in my mind that if you want a successful reboot, you get in Abrams to do something. I mean, it's divisive, just like Star Trek and Star Wars is, but it's so slick.
I kind of bailed on it at the time. I think I watched it on a flight.
Oh, wow.
And it just, because... The sideways explodey thing always rang wrong to me because he's very clearly being yanked from the side while the explosion's behind. Mm-hmm. It's like, physics doesn't work that way. Hollywood, stop trying to destroy physics.
But for me, the opening sequence of 3 Men has the best first 3 minutes of Philip Seymour Hoffman taunting his wife, and Tom Cruise is just talking at him going, come on, I don't know what you're doing. Don't do this, don't do this. Yeah. And he's just counting down.
What's your name? Do you have a wife? A girlfriend? Because if you do, I'm going to find her. I'm going to hurt her. I'm going to make her bleed.
Come on.
Man,
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
But you think about it, that role is pretty underwritten.
It is.
Like, he doesn't do... It's only because Philip Seymour Hoffman is playing that role that it works.
Yeah. But I think also, I like that the way Philip Seymour Hoffman plays it, right? He...
He's not screaming it. He's not shouting. He's just very much just like, I don't care. I'm just going to kill you, your wife, everybody else in the world, just like ants.
Yeah. I'm going to put a bomb in your head.
This was the first Mission Impossible movie post-Bourne, post-Daniel Craig Bond.
Mm.
And what was Ethan Hunt supposed to be? What kind of spy was he supposed to be? Mm. When you had these unexpected reboots of old characters.
Well,
right?
One, is he disavowed in this one?
He's
retired.
He's retired.
He's retired, and he gets pulled back in by Billy Crudup.
Ah, for one more job.
For one more job.
Yeah.
To save Felicity.
Yeah. Because it's an Abrams joint.
It's an Abrams joint.
Of course she's going to be in it.
Of course. Greg Grunberg and Felicity have to be in it,
yeah.
Right?
I think for me, for the shock for that one was how quickly in the movie Felicity sort of kicks it.
Mm, it was a shock to her as well. She said, I'm in this franchise for life. Oh, damn it.
Dang it.
But also, this movie set up this new character, because the Hunt we see in this movie is the Hunt that has gone through all the way through 6, because he's a very different character in 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
In 3, he seems very sort of, I wouldn't say jaded, but he's retired. Mentally, he's almost checked out.
He's a trainer.
He's like, I'm getting too old for this. Mm. You know, and it sort of really picked up along the way, you know, it sort of really grabs on in the later movies about that, I don't really know what I'm doing, but I'll figure it out kind of thing.
Yeah, they start building this over the next trilogy.
Yeah.
Really, into the fact that he doesn't know what he's doing. He'll figure it out as he goes along.
Brad Bird as well pulls off Ghost Protocol really, really well. Like, I think that was Brad Bird's first live-action movie.
Yeah.
And to pull off those massive action set pieces, I mean, not just the hanging off the Burj, but also that car chase in the sandstorm. I forgot what a great set piece it was.
Mm.
Yeah. The fight at the end in Mumbai with the parking lot.
With the parking lot thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Worst design for parking
Worst
lot
design
ever.
Parking lot no. in the world.
Those are all parked with their handbrake off, right? And these, like, ramps that just, like, come down. I was like, this is a bad idea. But that does have the best moment of him, like, hammering the button on the nuclear device, launch device, saying, mission accomplished. And it doesn't work. And then 5 minutes later, Luther's like, you didn't really say that, did you?
Yeah.
There's an element of getting to, you know, self-awareness in the character and in the series at that point.
I think with the Christopher McQuarrie movies, which we've now got two of, with Rogue Nation and then Fallout, I think they're settling into a groove in the sense that everything up to Ghost Protocol still felt like an experiment. Where can we take this character? Are we going to replace him with Jeremy Renner? What's going to happen, right? Is Tom Cruise getting too old for this? But I think with the McQuarrie ones, with Rogue Nation and now Fallout, they've kind of cemented the notion of what Ethan Hunt is.
Mm.
It took them a while, but now there's a familiar character on screen.
But it feels like they have a plan, because at the end of Ghost Protocol, it says your next mission, if you choose to accept it, is that the syndicate has control of the US drones.
Yeah, so
and,
like
and the syndicate plays into the next one, and they bring Sean Harris back for this one. It's like the J. Michael Straczynski style of Babylon 5 series writing.
Yeah.
It seems like, you know, could Henry Cavill be Brant in this if Renner wasn't busy doing the Avengers,
right?
You know, maybe Paula Patton was off doing Warcraft instead of being able to come back as Rebecca Ferguson's character,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, it feels like those could have been, you know, adjustments made, and they feel like a trilogy very much.
I wish they would start doing that, and I mean rewatching just sort of clips from all the films, as much as I like that the idea that there's new team members every time, because it shows IMF's is a big organization, I kind of want to see them come back at some point. I like the fact that Benji's come back. I like the fact that Luther's come back.
So Simon Pegg is very happy.
Yeah.
Well, Ving Rhames is the only one who's been in all of them, because Ving Rhames is that sense of continuity,
yeah.
Right?
And then, again, just saying these names out loud gets confusing. In Rogue Nation, he's in Malaysia.
He is.
Yes.
He's at the beginning, KL Tower.
For some reason, they need to hack a satellite from there in order to open the door on a plane. Not that door, Benji. And again, that was, but they kind of seem to have come back from that in, again, and Fallout. They have strapping crews to the side of a plane while it takes off. Seems to be like, I think that's as far as we should go. We don't need to send them into space on a rocket. We don't need to set them on fire. That's the biggest effect we'll actually need to do. Because that was insane at the time, and also the opening of the movie, which was very clever.
Mm. Yes.
I still think they're going to go to space.
So you reckon?
That's the next Mission Impossible, man.
Well,
Mission Impossible Moonraker. Yeah,
Mission Impossible Mars.
Exactly.
Just like Ethan Hunt trying to save the ISS from blowing up.
But for me, it's also I guess, a testament to them really caring about this franchise that every sequel seems to have gotten better in some way. And I don't think I can say that for many franchises. With 4, 5, and 6 especially, I mean, I still think 6 is the best of the lot now. I think Fallout is truly a great film.
The balance, it's now finally, the balance wasn't quite there with some of the other ones between humor or character or effects or everything. Although I still, just watching Ghost Protocol, that's when he has to get, the rope is not long enough, and Jeremy Renner just says that to him. Your line's too short. And he's like, yeah, I know. It's like, it's a brilliant moment of exasperation. But he does that, the humor's there, and then he runs across and does that kind of balletic flip. And as then, he comes forward, you think he's just going to slide in through the window. And
he slams his head
slams straight into the glass, and his feet go inside, and he falls out backwards. And it's like,
then they have to grab him.
He is ridiculously looking, and it's only because of Brad's super strong trouser seams that they save him. And that's, I think that's where, that's the kind of balance that they aim for since. It's got that humor, it's got that action, and it also has that ridiculous look.
It's just like, not everything's going to be perfect.
Yeah.
And you know what's more? You know, when I was watching Fallout, throughout the whole movie, I keep thinking, wow, this is a true masterclass in action movie making. And then it occurs to me that it's actually not possible unless you have a Tom Cruise. Yeah. Unless you have an actor who is willing to go the extra mile and do all of these insane stunts by himself, that sense of reality is absolutely lost.
And also as the producer, so we can sign off on it.
That too.
But I think also with Fallout, I think Fallout sort of really gains from the fact that there's five other movies before it, right? So you don't need to introduce Benji. You don't need to introduce the relationship with Alec Baldwin.
Need to introduce why he has to make that sacrifice to save Luther.
Not only that, but you don't have to introduce why he's doing all these silly things. It's just,
he's Ethan Hunt.
He's just Ethan Hunt.
Because he's now become Jim Phelps from the original TV show. Yeah. It's like, he is that, and at some point he will have to betray the team and be put down by the new guy who comes along later on.
Maybe, yeah. So I think Fallout really sort of doesn't have to spend time in the wife situation, the potential yes-no ex-lover assassin situation, you know?
Because apart from brand name recognition and the idea that you make more money, that is why you do sequels, because you have the characters out there and you can actually just play with them.
You can tell bigger stories. Yeah. Go watch Mission Impossible Fallout for sure, but also, we want to know which your favorite Mission Impossible movie is. Let us know if you have a guilty pleasure and really like number two, like me.
Or if you have like sections of the movie that you really like. I just love Cruise into jumping through that hole in the window, in the wall, with his guns like this for no reason. Like, his guns are up in the air beside his head for no reason and his knees built. And then he does a flip, even though he's already in the position to open his parachute. He does a flip into the same position and then opens his parachute. I'm just like, it's kind of cool.
It's a John Woo thing.
Yeah.
It is. It is. Also,
I want that on a t-shirt. It's a John Woo thing.
It's a John Woo thing with a white dove.
The doves go on the back, just guns like that.
It's not Mission Difficult, Mr. Hunt. It's Mission Impossible. Difficult should be the second one with the weirdest accent. With the weirdest accent and also some terrible lines.
And weirdly passive aggressive.
Yes.
He's like, do you want a coffee, cappuccino? Sit down, Mr. Hunt. Like, he's just like really weirdly, snaps. And his accent goes all over the place. But the Mission Difficult line is a classic.
You want her to sleep with a man and lie to him afterwards? She's a woman. She has all the qualifications she needs. And I'm like, what now? Whoa. You said what, Anthony Hopkins?
But a nice follow-up to that. The fact that they know these things like Hunt lip reads in multiple movies, they've referenced that before. Mm. But like, Benji starts talking about in Rogue Nation, oh yeah, hold your breath for 3 minutes, pull in this thing, put this thing in. Yeah, that's all fine. And Cruise is like, what? I gotta, what? He's like, yeah, it's not impossible. It's a bit difficult. It's not possible. And Cruise is like, no, this is really hard. I'm gonna die.
I like that scene when in the bathroom with the Philip Seymour Hoffman one, when Tom Cruise puts on the Philip Seymour Hoffman mask and then the chip hasn't quite initialized yet, and then the bodyguard walks in. So it's Philip Seymour Hoffman playing Tom Cruise playing Philip Seymour Hoffman. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. I like that. Yeah,
I love all of that. Yeah. Just pull off a mask every time. Mission Impossible Fallout is now in cinemas. But hey, we want you to tell us about your favorite Mission Impossible film so far. Tweet us. I'm on at Umar Pagan.
I'm on at McNasty Prime.
I'm at Bahe White.
You're listening to At The Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.